right, ladies and gentlemen, from around the Delaware Valley, welcome to the Justin Cohen Show on WWDB Talk 860. We're sponsored by Kotler, Hernandez, and Cohen. We've got a fantastic broadcast. Justin, how are you, sir?
Joseph D. Great to see you, my friend. How are you?
It's my pleasure. It's great to be here. You know, every time we it seems like we get together and do a show, the world gets a little crazier, man.
The world is most definitely getting crazier by the day. It's brutal. Absolutely brutal what's going on.
It is. Yeah. And so, obviously, you know, we're gonna you know, give it a little bright spot today. And we've got a fantastic guest.
Not because of you, Dave, because I'm the bright spot.
Actually, Dave. Yeah. You know, we're looking for a bright spot on this planet, and it's up to you to bring it to us.
Not too much. I'm happy to provide it.
I'm ecstatic to bring in David Lang. He's a partner at Saltz Mongolusi Bandeski. Dave, how are you?
I'm living the dream. How are you?
I'm fantastic, man.
That's I brought the big gun in today,
you
man.
Did.
Yeah, we're
you
not
did.
Messing around.
We don't have any boutique firms in the house today. We have big dog. And you know, I've had the pleasure of doing several broadcasts with a lot of your colleagues at Saltz Mongolusi Bandeski. And I have to say, I say this about the firm, because I do a lot of shows from up there. You and I haven't met yet, but I know we're going to do a show. In Washington, D.C., the White House was created to create an unfair advantage of foreign heads of state.
The Oval Office,
that's right?
Right.
Yeah, that's right. Bring in some other attorneys or I guess adjusters from the insurance company up the Saltz Mongolusi Bandeski on the what floor? 52nd floor of Liberty One. It's no different than the White House.
You may not know this, and Dave probably doesn't know this, but the way I settle my PI cases, I say, okay, listen, if you don't want to settle with me, what I'm going to do is I'm going to co-counsel with my boy Dave from Saltz Mongolusi, and without question,
really?
The case settles. Yeah, so I probably should pay him a referral fee for that, just for using his name.
It's okay. I got a sparkling water out of him.
I got one, too.
But it is true.
I mean, that is in almost every room in that facility up there at the top of Liberty One, which, by the way, you may not know this, but I was an iron worker for 16 years. And so I worked on top of I started at Liberty Two in the top. I worked on Liberty One just briefly. But, you know, all the high rise buildings, when I'm in those buildings, I know the skyline from actually working there, except not from the inside, from the outside.
Yeah.
What's ironic about that is this, Dave. When we had Mongo on a show with Drew Duffy, we had an awesome conversation. My father used to send all of our cases, work comp, PI, really all work comp, because he was a business manager of the Iron Workers Union, to Mongolusi, because we didn't have any.
Right.
We didn't have any. When you're an iron worker, there's a good chance that if there's an injury on a job and it gets to my dad's office, it's completely catastrophic.
Right.
So he would send everybody to Mongolusi. And ironically speaking, this will shock you, because when we were talking, we had a radio show, and Drew and Mongo said their first big case Mongolusi had that started it all off was a guy by the name of Mike Whitlin. Mike Whitlin at the Tropicana, with the elevator shaft, everything crashed down. He was my boss on the Frank Fidel.
Wow.
One of the nicest guys ever. And the stair collapse or the elevator shaft collapse at the Tropicana in Atlantic City.
Wow.
The parking garage?
Yeah, parking garage, right.
Yep.
And what a tragedy of epic proportions. One of the nicest guys. I can see him right now. But they did such a good job, for their family in such a messy situation, that our guys, there's nothing political about my dad. So, in other words, it's about taking care of people.
No doubt.
And so,
no doubt.
Justin, if you would, how do you guys know one another?
So Dave and I
Jewish geography?
Yeah, Jewish geography, right. Come on, you don't know this?
Besides going out to the clubs when you were kids, I don't know.
Right.
Kids.
All Jewish kids in the Delaware Valley, plus or minus 2 years, I'd say, have only probably one degree of separation. So we actually have multiple different connections to each other, Dave and I. One being through my sister-in-law, who is a Cheltenham grad, as Dave is as well. But we also have another interesting connection, which is the young, very impressive associate attorney who we have, whose office is 5 feet from me, is the brother-in-law of Mr. Langsam over here. So Dave is married to Dan's sister, Dan Levine's sister, who's an attorney at our office. So we have all kinds of connections here, my man.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, as we get started, Dave, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your team at the firm, and a little bit about the firm.
Yeah, sure. So I appreciate the story that you already offered. And that's a wonderful thing. I'm glad that everything worked out as well as it could have under
terrible circumstances.
Yeah, absolutely.
And listen, no one who walks in our door had a good day at work or a good day in general. And our job is to try to do what we can to get answers to questions that they obviously have. And to the extent we can help them out financially, then that's obviously what we're going to do. So my practice, actually funny you mention the Jewish geography connection, because I met my wife down the shore, which is subjective, but for us it was Margate, the epicenter of Jewish geography.
But by the way, when you're Jewish, you assume that it's at Margate. So if it's anything but Margate, that's when you fill it in.
Yeah, if you're Irish Catholic, you're going to Wildwood.
You're going to Wildwood, right, exactly right.
There's somewhere for everyone. It's a wonderful thing, New Jersey.
That's right.
And at the time, I was doing medical malpractice work, and she was in medical school. So suffice it to say, we didn't get along very well right out of the gate.
Must have been a great debate as soon as she smelled.
Oh, breathing
what
fire.
He didn't tell you is she was the target defendant on a few of the cases he pursued.
So, yeah, I met her in a deposition room.
You can't handle the truth.
So that's what I started doing, and for a host of reasons, transitioned to do more of what I do now, which is product liability work, more catastrophic type injury work, and it really touches on a host of different things. And what I like to do, and I tell my clients this all the time, I will not blow smoke up your butt. I won't sugarcoat anything. I will be real with you. I will turn over every stone that I possibly have to find out what the answer may be. And being creative is really the way that we do what we need to do.
Right. Yeah, I find that really interesting, because when we've had conversations, Justin, about there's that guy right there. That guy looks familiar.
Yeah, I'm in troubles here. Yeah.
Cohen from The Sign.
Yeah, right. Mitch wishes.
That's right. Wait. Mitch Cohen just dropped into the house. Mitch, you want to sit down? Justin's been keeping the mic hot for you.
Not you.
No, you see that, right? You see that? Good to see you. Absolutely. Yeah. So that was Mitch Cohen, who was on our inaugural broadcast.
Yes, he was. He was.
Yeah. And we say
C minus is what.
What Cohen is that on the sign there of Kotler Hernandez?
And I said, depends on who you ask.
That's right. But you know, and we're going to get to that, because you both come from families of lawyers.
Yes,
and I want to get to that. But you said something about you know, you're creative and all that. You know, I didn't even realize as a lawyer, that was such a big part of it. Seeing the forest through the trees.
Yeah.
Understanding that there may be something there that somebody else doesn't see.
Right.
And Dave, you kind of talked about that, even from an auto accident perspective. You know, you're looking for the not obvious and different perspectives. Where did that come from?
Oh, boy. Just years of being the youngest of three children and having to try to scrape my way to get through life.
You got to find something.
For anyone to care about what you have to say.
You got to find something.
That's it.
But I got to find something.
No, it's always been something I've liked doing, is trying to identify a problem and whatever the solution may be. But listen, to be totally honest, the advent of technology, right? Even something as simple as the Google Street View makes life a hell of a lot easier.
Right.
You can be much more creative. You can get a lot more information much more quickly. And, you know, it's funny. I don't know that I need to jump into the story just yet, but when we're ready for it, I have one about a case. It was a motorcycle crash case. A guy was horrifically injured.
Right.
And the case came to us because the client wasn't happy with what was being pushed, which was, all right, somebody hit you. They've got X amount of money in insurance. That's all that you got.
You're saying pushed by another firm.
By another lawyer.
By another lawyer.
And client wasn't content with that, given how badly he was hurt. So they come to us, and I remember at the very first meeting, we're sitting in a conference room, and just Google satellite view.
Right.
And looking at it, and I'll get into as much or as little detail as you want whenever we're ready for it, but just by looking at Google satellite view, it was like, we could do this, this, and this.
Right.
And fast forward a couple of years, case resolves, we end up sending a check to somebody just based off of what he would have earned at the right. beginning, based off of what was initially offered. And he's like, how'd you do? And I was like, well, I can't tell you
right.
how I did, but I can give you a little bit of background about what we did.
Right.
They now send us cases.
Right.
Really? Because they're like, holy smokes.
Right.
How did you even come up with that?
So I'm going to tell you what I learned from Dave. And Dave and I are contemporaries. I think we're probably the exact same age.
Yep.
And, you know, we respect the hell out of those guys. And, you know, KHC does catastrophic injuries too, but there's been a lot of opportunities where our firms have been able to work together on cases because we've represented different plaintiffs involved in the same accident, or we've co-counseled something, or it might have fallen on the other side of the bridge. So we've packaged it up and sent it over to those guys. And Dave and I can't remember where he said it. I think we were out to lunch one day, but his line was, if the injuries are big enough, between the brain power and the resources and the infrastructure that they have over there, they're going to find some creative way to make the liability argument, make it viable. So I have absolutely stolen Dave's line or his credo and used it for my own, and I don't give him credit for it. So here I am now on my own radio show giving him credit for it. But, you know, like Dave mentioned that story, you know, sometimes people say, you know, things maybe aren't obvious, and, you know, there, you can be really creative in this business, especially if the injury warrants it. You got to just kind of sit down, take the time. And look, we all live crazy lives. The emails don't stop just because you're sitting in front of your computer looking at the satellite view, trying to make a liability argument out of something. But man, when you really dig in, and I've learned this from those guys, I've learned this from my partner, Adam, who I've mentioned is my mentor. And, you know, there is some room for creativity in this world. And I've really learned that from those guys. And Dave and I have worked on some cases together. And just to, I'm jumping around a little bit, but back to his point about how he talks about telling clients, like it is, I'm not going to blow smoke up your butt. We worked on a case together that I was looking to refer over to him. And he vetted the living hell out of this case. And it was a tough case. It was a really tough case. Had to do with some abuse kind of in a home for troubled kids, and
sure.
Really, really difficult case. And it was a little bit sensitive for me because the person who referred it was my old intern here at the end. You know, I've kind of taken him under my wing a little bit, really good kid. So it was a little bit of a sensitive case. And Dave worked the living crap out of it. He turned over every stone. He was sending up requests. He was doing, and he communicated with the client. And so it wasn't like 8 months went by, the guy hasn't heard from Dave, and all of a sudden Dave gets on a Zoom and tells him, hey, look, I'm not going to be able to represent you. Dave was speaking to him, was every couple weeks, every month, telling him exactly what he's doing, you know, filling him in. So then when the time came, there just wasn't a case. And if Dave and his people can't make a case out of it, there ain't no case.
And it's interesting because setting these cases, you know, one thing we talk about is the contingency fee agreement.
Right.
Okay. And it still amazes me today, mm-hmm. that attorneys like yourselves at the highest level, people can walk in and get the opportunity to be represented by you both.
Right.
And, you know, and your absolutely stellar teams without putting a penny out of their
right.
pocket into it. Now, there's... And in fact, you will vet a case and probably spend lots of money on vetting it before you actually accept it. Having said that, and I'm not joking, I can't even imagine it, but having setting expectations at the beginning of a case when you're talking to somebody. Somebody walks through your door and it may seem obvious to them. We all we all know a family or even us, you know, you got a cold or an ailment yourself, you're diagnosing yourself. Well, legally, it's no different. Everybody's got a mal case, right? The doctor didn't call me on time.
Yeah.
But the point is, having said that, even if there is a case, you know, they got the coffee in at McDonald's,
right.
A couple million dollars. This cat just T-boned me. I'm going down to shore in a month. This has got to be worth more than $2 million. If he got the, can you get me to $2 million in a couple of weeks? Right. 3 minutes. Wait a second. Hold on here. Set those expectations from day one so that the individual isn't he or she their worst own enemy throughout this process, because we've talked about it before. These insurance companies just ain't rolling over, even if it is a case.
Right.
Talk about the importance of that. Along with calling it the way it is, setting them up for success and you, so you don't have a client self-destructing, number one, and number two, calling you every 3 days saying, did they make an offer?
Right.
Listen, it's an important point, because at the end of the day, because the cost of our doing business is whatever we front, whatever we do to hire doctors and engineers and scientists and take depositions and do inspections and fly all over the country to do whatever we need to do, because we've got national and international practices. So there's a lot of work that's got to get done. Because of the investment that's made, and because our ability, it's a for-profit business at the end of the day, but our ability to make money is based off of how well we're able to piece this case together. What you said is true. We need to be really critical at the beginning. And I had a conversation yesterday with a potential client saying that exact point. It's like, I am not going to lie to you. I'm not going to sugarcoat anything. We are spending all of this time right now. For example, right? Someone gets hurt on the job. OSHA has 6 months from the day that somebody gets hurt to complete their investigation.
Right.
If the company that somebody worked for wants to fight it, then it gets drug out a little bit longer. But the conversation was fundamentally, listen, you guys, clients, should want me to do everything that I have to do at this stage.
Right.
Because what's the worst possible outcome is we all go through this process together, right, and a year and a half, 2 years down the line, like, sorry, guys, there is nothing that we can do,
right,
especially when we could have learned that right up front.
Yeah.
And again, it's part client expectation, because it doesn't help anybody to be anything other than transparent.
Right.
And two, it's a business. So you ultimately need to make sure that if we're going to go in this, we're going to go ride together,
right,
us with clients in you know, the passenger seat and the driver's seat, that we're going to be able to get where we need to go.
I think he just dropped the line from Bad Boys. Did you say ride together? No, die together, Bad Boys for life. I think that's what
remember the movie, the other guys, he kept quoting, one of them kept quoting one of the girl groups. Oh my God.
Oh, I know.
Waterfalls.
TLC. TLC.
The boss kept going. He kept quoting lines from TLC. But what's amazing is this, especially from different views.
Right.
Usually they say David versus Goliath, right? But in Magaluzzi's case, it's not always. I wouldn't say David. You guys have massive resources.
Yeah.
Billions of dollars in recoveries and success. It's unbelievable. And you guys are a quality, would you say medium-sized firm or boutique?
I say over 20 lawyers now, man.
Yeah, okay. That means boutique.
Yes.
Right. Whew, I mean, that's my point.
Yeah.
So you guys are a nice-sized, medium-sized firm. You guys are a massive firm. But together, either way, valuing the case to the best of your ability, and I don't mean can you tell me how much I'm getting, but making sure you're right in regards to accepting that case, valuing it to the best of your ability, because you're going to have to get experts and all those things, and the last thing you want is to go through a case and literally have underestimated the cost it was going to take to actually represent the case.
Right.
And then the client himself or herself is, you know, crap out of luck because there's nothing there. How big a part of that, you know, when you have complex cases, maybe a med-mal case, maybe a complex
products liability
product
case,
liabilities, right. You know, what you having that team there and all around that table to accept the case that might be a case, but you might say it could be a case, but it's going to cost us more than it's worth. How important is that to have all those eyes on it and kind of size that case up before you accept it?
It's really important. And one of the benefits that we have of working with Justin and his partners and the other folks here is that we have wider scope of expertise. Right. And folks that are have additional sets of eyes that have handled a host of cases in their own right. On our end, we've got folks handle all these different types of cases. And even it's actually important because a lot of the things that we do is, let's say that we've got something and we're collectively, Justin and I, or anyone else in Justin's on Justin's end or on my end, we're trying to evaluate whether we're going to take something. It's oftentimes really valuable to have somebody who doesn't have that type of expertise take a look at it, because at the end of the day, right, what we do for a living is we try cases in front of juries.
Right.
Right. Ultimately, we are going to ask a jury to say, you insurance company are going to take some of your money and you're going to pay it to somebody else because something happened and we think that your insured's responsible. Right. Okay, fine. So if we're going to be making that presentation to a jury, it's helpful to have people that don't necessarily have the background that's relevant mm-hmm. to the case to be able to hear it and understand it. But it's invaluable having all the sets of eyes. And some of these complex cases
that's what I mean. Like
are so detail-oriented, yeah. And aside from the money, it's just the technical merits of it.
Right.
Well, you know, you say that, and I think I had this conversation with Larry and Josh Cohen. What's weird about that is I wonder how you can actually get when you have a complex case that's so hard, where you can actually have a jury of one's peers actually review it. And I say that because some of these cases are so complicated that you wonder if for example, you know, they would bring in, you know, like there would be special types of juries where that only understand nuclear fist, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Whatever. I wish they had that.
That's crazy. I mean, that's what I'm saying.
Honestly, it's because you get out of the car, you don't exit the vehicle.
Right.
Right. Right.
Don't talk like that.
Right.
Pretend as though we were here, we're hanging out. These are waters, but if they were beers, then we would just be hanging out, drinking beers, and having a conversation.
Right.
Which is what you should be doing.
Exactly.
Yeah. I know, man, but damn. You know, somebody's, you know, trying to translate some of this stuff, you know, and I was telling you guys I did a show last week, and the topic itself is so complicated. I've done 4 shows, and I still have barely know what it is, but I got a basic understanding, and the first thing everybody says is, this is real complicated.
Right.
I will tell you this, though, and this is not a... Guess what?
Were they talking about just doing the ABCs?
Yeah, I couldn't get past that. What's after all? I told you, I can only go so far. I mean, I'm an iron worker for crying out.
But I love you, brother.
But let me just explain this. Yeah. These topics, I mean, this particular issue, national security,
right?
Like giving up our energy efficiency, energy independence depends on a lot of it.
Right.
And so our point is, so it's in the easy. You can understand that, right? Well, guess what? How do you make sure? I guess that's, these topics, it must be just an art to both you guys to say, listen.
Oh, yeah.
This is brain surgery, and maybe it is. Here's how it relates to regular people like us.
I know personally when I've done some MedMal cases, I actually find, again, I'm a nerd. I actually find it fun to kind of learn the science behind it, the medicine behind it. Because again, Dave put it perfectly. When you tear us down to the studs, we're trial attorneys. So whatever the issue is, we're going to put on our case. So the key is just to become a master of the knowledge. So then you can put on your case and know what you're talking about and make persuasive arguments to juries and know it well enough that you can dumb it down I don't mean that in a kind of a negative way.
But put it in layman's terms.
Sure.
Man.
Right. Look, if you put me on a jury right now and the issue is about, you know, renewable energy or something like, do I have a 10,000 foot view understanding of what renewable energy is? Sure. But do I understand the nuances of it? Absolutely not. So I'm actually very curious because, Dave, I know we usually don't get into the war stories because I don't want to say they're not always interesting, but I know you guys got.
I mean, you took duck boats.
Yeah.
I mean, you have some of the biggest cases. Look at 22nd Market
Salvation Army.
Army. You guys have some of the biggest name cases in the country. So have at it.
Yeah. And I'd be curious about some of the complexities that you face some of these cases, and then also some of the cases out of curiosity, that either you vetted out, you thought you had a great case, and then it kind of went down the tubes, and why? Because there's, and in the thing about the Salvation Army, there's nothing easy. There's nothing simple about these catastrophic cases. So I'm curious about some of your war stories, both good and bad.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And I guess, you know, I'll start with a recent example.
Yeah.
And then one actually that Justin, you and I worked on together a few years ago. So
that's probably the bad one that you're going to blame Justin.
The bad part.
Yeah, I had this sucker. It was Tommy, this son of a.
So listen, I will say this: whenever I have a client that I get to represent who has a potential workers' comp claim that's in Justin's wheelhouse, he gets the.
Thank you, my man. He does. Dave takes good care of us,
and it's important to make sure that if I'm going to take one of my clients and say, listen, call Justin, they're going to take care of you. They will do whatever it is that they need to do to maximize your outcome and,
awesome.
And make
it
as whole as possible.
Appreciate it.
It's really, it's a wonderful thing. So this conversation actually is one that's ongoing right now. And what we do, I personally do a lot of what's called crashworthiness. So that's a fancy term for when cars don't work the way they're supposed to.
Right.
Cars getting crashes, right? I was having this conversation with my wife last night.
User error, my friend, sometimes, right?
Of course. It hit something in the road.
Right.
It's a phantom, you know, object or something. Cars, for example, are designed with airbags and seatbelts because automakers anticipate that bad things happen. That's
right.
The reason why you have those types of safety devices. And one of the types of cases that we've handled and I personally have handled and investigated is if you get in a crash and the car explodes or catches on fire really quickly, that's a bad day.
Yeah.
And for obvious reasons, but also because it's not supposed to happen.
Right.
But within reason, what do you expect a manufacturer of a car to do? You can't take out the utility of the car altogether, like a knife, right? You can't make a knife dull because then it won't cut things.
Right.
But with a car, one of the things that you need to do is you need to evaluate how the crash happened, evaluate what happened to the person, determine whether or not you can identify with specificity where the fire in the car started.
Right.
And assuming you can do all those things, then you need to figure out, well, was there something wrong with the car? Was it defective in some way? Should the fuel line have been run through the frame rail? Should it have been ran over the frame rail? Should the fuel tank have been in the middle of the car, the back of the car, the front of the car, the side of the car? Blah, 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 blah. So what we're dealing with right now is a single car crash. Unfortunately, a young man was killed in the crash.
Right.
And the car's gone. Right. One of the most difficult things in our line of work is to make a case without the evidence. Now, we've got photographs. So one thing that you can try to do and
what happened to the car was that you guys came. They didn't retain you guys until after the car had been.
Exactly.
You didn't get into it. Yeah.
Exactly.
Got it.
Yeah.
And, you know, tangential point. Right. This is broadly applicable. If something happens, you got to act fast
right away. Yeah.
And I had this conversation yesterday in a different case that we are investigating now. An incident actually just happened relatively recently down the road from here. The second we get involved, make sure the stuff doesn't disappear.
Right.
Surveillance videos disappear. The physical evidence disappears. Investigative reports disappear. All that type of stuff. So in that particular case, the reason why the car isn't here is because, listen, first and foremost, it was a horrific incident. Yeah. And as a parent, it's incomprehensible to me as to how you may feel, but still, your first order of business isn't thinking about a lawsuit against a car manufacturer.
Right.
It's let's just go through, sign the paperwork, and unfortunately, the car's gone. But
how old was the driver?
He was early 20s.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it was pretty horrific. And in those situations, you have to have all these different disciplines come together, and we're trying. We're going to see what we can do. But the one that Justin and I had a handful of years ago was another. Again, I love hanging out with Justin. Unfortunately, when it comes to business, we're not.
Right.
We're talking about bad.
Well, by the way, that's a. That's your phone rings, it's typically a catastrophic situation.
Right.
Like you said, somebody on the other line is in a bad way.
Right.
Yeah. And so a couple of years ago, we were looking into a crash. It was a tractor-trailer crash and started a fire. I think it was on the Jersey Turnpike, right on Exit 4. and we were looking into whether we could make a claim against the manufacturer of the tractor because they had designed it defectively in some way. Because, right. again, if there's a crash, shouldn't just explode.
Was it a one-car crash?
Yeah, it was... Okay.
Hit a guardrail or something.
Yeah, like I don't remember exactly how we lost control, but in any event, the end of the crash sequence, tractor goes up on fire. Young guy had four kids.
Jesus.
And in that situation, the tractor was gone, right? So I know Justin was looking at it from the comp perspective. I was looking at it. I think they ended up going to Maryland.
Yeah.
And I was looking at it from whether there was some type of defect. And in that case, we couldn't make something happen because the evidence was gone. But even then, we just weren't able to bridge the gap. In contrast to, we tried a case in June in City Hall in Philadelphia, which was the last stage of this case that had been pending for a while. And one of the things that we looked at in that case, as we do in all catastrophic injury cases, is whether there was a claim against the automaker. Right. And there are some car manufacturers that issue recalls, or sometimes they call them something sugar-coated, like customer satisfaction campaign.
Right.
Fantastic.
Right.
But in a lot of cases, we're able to prove that there's a crash, and just sticking with this example, there's a fire, and it turns out that the reason why there's a fire is because the fuel tank failed, and the fuel tank failed because it was in a bad location, and the manufacturer knew that it was in a bad location and tried to come up with some fix, but it was a stupid fix, and then bad things happened anyway. So, yeah, there's lots of moving parts.
Right, and just being able to see the forest through the trees there, is something that clients are very fortunate, because a lot of people, by the way, that's in a lot of sense, having that wherewithal and the tenacity to actually find it.
Yeah.
I assume that that the difference between one of the differences between great attorneys and firms and other attorneys is that some just want the easy cases when they can.
Sure.
they don't want to dig deep,
right.
Because they don't know what's on the other side,
and which is okay. Some people that they're perfectly comfortable kind of having their practice here at
that may be their business model,
absolutely, which is why, and again, I don't know the numbers, but I'm assuming a lot of the referrals that Dave and his team get or from attorneys, because...
Well, you mentioned something interesting there. What's interesting about that is when you were saying that about Justin, and it's the difference between getting a referral, a lead and a case.
Right.
So when you get a case from Justin or vice versa, you've already likely, and maybe you haven't, but you definitely looked at it with some experienced eyes. You're sending over, or it's coming sent over through educated eyes. So it's probably a case, and having those extra eyes, I guess as many on there as possible. And I'm sure that in the process of you guys working together, they're probably like, I don't know, but this could be it. You might want to check it out. I don't know how those conversations go, but having that many, a network like that. And I know that with Saltz, Mongoose and Bendesky, you get a lot of referrals from attorneys from across. That's how you got the duck boat in Mississippi, or the one
Missouri.
So I was wondering how the hell, you would get that case, even though I knew you.
I actually don't think that was a referral. I think that was organically generated.
Well, they probably,
because of the work that
you didn't fill
because of the Philly one.
The guys did, out
gotcha.
Here.
Gotcha.
Right, but my point is, people under get the national reputation.
Yes,
and attorneys. Obviously, especially if it was a smaller firm, why not, you guys have the resources to be able to spend, hundreds of thousands of dollars on a case if you just believe in it, and actually, win the case and get a return, and that bodes well for the referring attorney also. Let's do this. Let's take a little break.
Sure.
We'll have more from the Justin Cohen Show after the break.
Getting injured at work or due to the negligence of another party can be a devastating, sometimes life-altering experience. During these painful times, it's easy for you, a family member, or someone you know to feel like there is no one to turn to. Rest assured that Justin Cohen and the attorneys at Cotler, Hernandez & Cohen have your back. With decades of experience in representing those impacted by work injuries, motor vehicle accidents, slip and fall accidents, defective products, nursing home abuse and neglect, and more, Justin Cohen and the attorneys at Cotler, Hernandez & Cohen will get you the recovery and the justice you deserve. And you will never pay a dime out of pocket, because at Cotler, Hernandez & Cohen, they don't get paid unless they win your case. And they like to win. Cotler, Hernandez & Cohen are board-certified attorneys by the New Jersey Supreme Court in both workman's compensation and civil litigation, which is a testament to their willingness to take your case all the way to trial. Call Justin Cohen and the attorneys at Cotler, Hernandez & Cohen at 856-751-7676. That's 856-751-7676. And have a winning team on your side.
Vision loss is not something that you feel until it happens.
Most people lose their vision from diseases like macular degeneration and glaucoma. Not at birth.
3 million Americans have glaucoma, and half don't even know it.
11 million people in the United States have macular degeneration.
So many eye disorders can be treated if caught early.
Make a plan today to get your eyes checked.
Visit brightfocus.org to learn more.
To battle is to fight, to struggle, to overcome. And ultimately, for the Marine Corps, it means to win. There is no alternative. It's not just a statement of intent. It's a promise to our nation. A promise kept for more than two centuries. A promise of the Marines.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Justin Cohen Show on WWDB Talk 860. I'm Joe Dougherty, your co-host. We've got a fantastic show. We're sponsored by Cotler, Hernandez and Cohen. Fantastic broadcast. Justin's guest is David Langsam, who's a partner at Saltz, Mongolusi & Bendeski, one of the premier firms in the country, personal injury. I find amazing. There's so many teams there. I know, obviously, I know some attorneys that work that have that work there, and that place is always rocking, even on the weekends.
Sure is.
I mean, you're not, you know, like, you know, the one thing, everybody's tenacious, you know, and I love seeing firms like yours, Justin, and yours, David, who have a similar passion for your clients. Where do you want to go, Justin?
So, well, first, real quick, on a side note, if anybody has ever gets the chance to go to, was it the 51st floor? 52nd floor.
It's incredible.
Their office. Now, I was there a couple times. I worked at a defense firm for a hot second about 10 years ago. The dark side, yes. And it was a time of my life that I pretend didn't exist.
You're not alone.
You know what? My girlfriend broke up with me. I ended up going to defense firm, and things just kind of devolved from there.
Write a movie about that.
Exactly right.
You met Adam Cotler and the rest of his history.
Exactly right. That was called rock bottom. But I was able to go have a few depths at Dave's office, and they have the coolest frickin'. Now, we have a pretty cool office here, man. We got team conferences. However,
yeah.
There is no law firm in the country that has as cool an office as they do. And I'm a Springsteen fan, so I made it to the Springsteen room.
Oh, yeah. I saw that.
I was blown. And I'm a diehard Philly guy, sports guy, as you guys know, 4 for 4. And they had all the memorabilia and the signed stuff. I was absolutely blown away.
Talk about that,
man.
The Springsteen wall, like all the memorabilia, because it's awesome.
Oh, it's not just a room. The entire office is lined with it.
It was Springsteen. Is that a Mongolusi thing?
Oh, that is Mongo through and through.
Okay.
And every open spot on the wall is full of something awesome. And it's funny you mentioned it. So one of the conference rooms in the office is called the Phillies room. It's called the Phillies room because it's got a table that's got the hue and tone of a bat, and the seats are all red leather. But then up on the wall, and this is when they were demolishing the vet.
Right.
They had two. Veteran Stadiums had two. two World Series banners from
1980 and...
Well, no, specifically from that year.
Oh, from the year, from the 1980
team. They had two of them,
team.
And they auctioned one of them off.
Right.
And the firm bought the banner and framed it. And the thing's massive. It was, I don't know, 12 by 10 feet up on the wall. And that's the Phillies room. And now, just off to the left, because there's not enough wall space left, is a jersey from 2008 with everyone having signed it.
Yeah.
So, listen, hopefully next is the Eagles room. I mean, we're a couple years removed from
come
the Super
on,
Bowl,
man.
But my goodness.
Hey, maybe this year you'll need a Sixers room. But by the way, Joe, if we ever plan a big heist, we're going to the 52nd floor, man. We're taking
that
banner.
Cleaners here. Yeah. Cleaners in the house here. I'm here to shine the Springsteen memorabilia.
Like me and you are.
Put it right here.
Even close to cool enough to be able to pull off a heist.
I'll tell you what the problem is there. They just drop the mask mandate in Philly. Otherwise,
we had it, man. Right, exactly.
Oh, yeah, no, it's Smith and Wesson cleaning here. I don't know.
Yeah, but I digress. Their office is so cool. So if anybody ever has a chance to go see it.
It's unbelievable. Even if you got to lie and say you got a case.
Exactly right.
And I got to tell you, it never gets old.
Oh, I can't imagine.
I started at the firm when I was...
What year?
My second year of law school. So it was 2009. And I worked there for the summer, and I haven't left. And every day going up there, still the same vibe. It's gorgeous.
Has Margo ever met Bruce? I wonder.
Yeah.
He has?
Yeah.
I mean, Bruce would love it himself.
Oh, man.
That view. Now, like I said, I've seen that view, you know, from the outside the window area.
I can't.
No.
You're not scaling the walls?
No.
Even now, I can't believe it. I mean, I was a union iron worker for 15 years. I still got my card, my retiree's card here. But my point is, even now I say to myself, how the hell did I actually do that for that many years?
That's tough work, man.
But just in case, by the way, fellas, in case the law thing doesn't work out, he's in the local.
Just trying to make
you feel good.
Let me
either
tell you
way,
something.
You're working on the 52nd
you
floor.
You could put a pot of a gold in front of me and say, this is all yours if you can assemble this IKEA table. And I couldn't do it in a million lifetimes.
Guess
man.
What? I'm the only Irish Catholic iron worker that was a horrible carpenter, couldn't fix my own house, and I don't drink. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I go to the bar, I want Diet Coke.
Right.
I don't have a beer, don't get me wrong.
But honestly, you know, sticking with the building, I got a ton of respect for the guys, for example, that are on the outside cleaning the windows. And I look at that and I was like, you know what? There is nothing you can give to me or pay me to put me on that side of the glass.
And whatever they're getting paid, pay them more because I don't care what they're making.
Ironically, though, the only justice they get in a case where something goes wrong is you guys in this room right now.
Yeah,
guess what?
That's right.
And I worked on the radio towers in Roxborough. Mm-hmm. The radio towers in Roxborough are 1,200 feet high. Okay, and I can tell you, want to talk about sobering of epic. I didn't even want the job. My dad's friend, Teddy Harrison, was the head of East Coast Hoist and North American Tower, and boom, I find myself, and he gives me a jacket. He gives me a jacket on the first day. And I'm like, great, I guess I can't quit. I got a jacket.
That's how they suck you in.
I remember the day because when you're an iron worker, you can work for a million different contractors. You make the same working on the first floor as you do 1,000 feet in the air. But those guys, when they do the towers and all that, and they're up that, they come from all over the country. When you're working on high-rise buildings, that's right out of the hall. Anyway, I
digress. So I wanted to talk about the building, but you know, I'd be remiss if, Dave, I didn't kind of throw the floor to you a little bit. I mean, you've seen some of the most horrific, catastrophic, tragic cases. And, you know, I think it's of great interest to people. It's of great interest to me and I think to Joe.
Definitely.
Unless Joe's faking it
I'm faking
time.
It. Yeah. No.
some of your trial war stories because, you know, I usually, on this show, I like to keep it light, like to give people a platform, talk about themselves, a little bit about their business, but not too much into the weeds. But I'd be absolutely remiss if we didn't get a couple trial stories from you because you guys have seen, and KHC, we've seen some crazy stuff. You guys have seen some of the craziest things, I'm sure. Some of the craziest trials that have happened on the East Coast. So I kind of want to hear if you have a couple war stories for us.
Yeah, sure. And I think the point that I want to make with the story that involves two trials, and it's not super specific, but it's I think, an important point to make. I always say this to clients. Whether you're sitting for a deposition or you're sitting in front of a jury, at the end of the day, the words that come out of your mouth are really important. The substance obviously matters. but the way that you are perceived when the words come out of your mouth is equally, if not more, important than that.
That's a great point.
And the overarching theme there is, think about it. You're going to trial. You're asking a jury to take money from one company and give it to a person. It's a wealth transfer.
That's, right.
That's what we do. And juries want to give money to people that they like. Very simple.
Sure.
At the end of the day, you could have a great case. If a jury don't like it, they're going to find a way to make sure that you don't get what you think you deserve. So we tried. I personally was involved in one of them, and the second one I sat in on and watched. We tried in the same courtroom.
Is this in Philly?
In Philly, okay. In front of the same judge, two cases over the course of, I don't know, it was maybe 12 months, maybe 18 months. And in the one case, the first one, we represented a young man who was delivering a big electrical step-down transformer to a job site in King of Prussia. And in the course of offloading this thing, it fell onto him and got really, really, really badly injured. And it's one of those cases where you look at a guy and
you can't believe he actually made it through.
And yeah, then you looked at him and you wouldn't know, though, that he had been through everything he'd been through.
Right.
Just huge guy.
Right.
He looked like a linebacker. In fact, he was. He played college football. Yeah. And like one of his good buddies went on and got a ring in 2009 in Pittsburgh.
Oh, wow.
And one of the things we have to do is you humanize him, right? You tell the story. And that's one of the most powerful things we can do. And one of the stories, right? And this is, you know, this is war story-ish, but it's more specific to how we humanize clients, is we had somebody come in and share with us a story about this guy who, when you look at him, you wouldn't know that he was so badly hurt. His inability to do something as mundane as walk two blocks.
Right.
And after he got hurt, it was up obviously in King of Prussia, he moved down to Florida, and he was trying to work as a real estate agent, and he was walking, or the person he worked for was out to lunch and wanted the keys to show a unit.
Right.
So he calls our client to come bring the keys over. After a half hour, client's not there. His boss goes to walk back to the real estate office to look for him, and halfway, literally two blocks, so halfway along the way, he sees our guy bawling, just sitting on a stoop because he couldn't make the walk.
Right. That's this is a guy who played football in college. Yeah.
Yeah, and you'd have no idea, again.
Right.
But that was a really important story. But I've digressed, kind of. So that was a case where I had some legitimate concern that a jury was going to look at our guy and say, you know,
he looks fine.
Injury, he doesn't appear that badly hurt.
Right.
But it was his truck. It was his equipment. It was his delivery. He was the one that ultimately was the captain of the ship. He made the decisions. He was responsible and in control. But he was a delightful person.
Right.
A just sweetheart.
Well-spoken.
It sounds like you had two challenges. Number one, he doesn't look injured, obviously. And number two, he was the one that can control, right? And so, in other words, you had to find...
Those are some serious hurdles to get over in front of a jury.
The negligence, right.
Yeah, you got to prove that somebody is responsible or not responsible, in this case, trying to deflect it away from our guy, and then prove that the injuries really are that significant.
And by the way, the jury doesn't get to sit down, have coffee with him, get to know him, get to know his family, get to know his values, right?
This well, is you gotta, I guess you got a
limited scope of time to make this guy, to make a jury of your peers realize how good of a guy is that you know he is.
Yeah.
That's challenging.
And what he used to be able to do and what he can do now.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I guess you got to get not only creative, but, you know, you got to get, you know, creative and factual.
Yeah. And one of the things that we so often navigate in our cases, Justin and I, is that if an insurance company or defense lawyer has some questions about how badly injured someone really is, they may hire an investigator to follow them and videotape them.
Yeah. Right.
The surveillance, right? And we get to ask for it, but we don't get it, at least in Pennsylvania, until after our person's been deposed, because they don't... I get it, right? It's unfair for the person to know what has been recorded. Fine. So in this case, with this one particular guy, they surveilled him. It's the best surveillance I've ever seen. So they followed him into a Home Depot, and he was with one of his buddies because he had a rental property outside of it was actually in Philly. It was close to Cheltenham.
Right.
And he needed to replace the water heater. So they were hoping that they were going to catch him in Home Depot.
Lifting up.
Lifting up, yeah.
Picking up this big old 75-gallon water heater and popping it in
Dave,
the car.
Once they do that, though, do they have to disclose it even if it's not in their favor?
Unless they want to lie. I mean, yeah, they have to, because we make a request and we say, okay, did you surveil him? If they say no, and they actually did because the outcome was bad, and then we find out about it, that's bad.
And you do this through your interrogatories, right?
Yep. So we make a written request for it, and in this case, they had to turn it over, and this guy, again, I just in your mind's eye, like 6'3", 6'4", 250, looks like a linebacker.
Right.
Standing idly by while his buddy, who is, I don't know, I'm 5'6 and 150, probably like me, and his buddy is struggling with this giant hot water heater to get it on the cart. And
it's perfect.
I used it to cross-examine the defense doctor. I was like, are you serious?
Right.
It was awesome.
They're using his Dave Langsam size friend to carry the 75 gallon.
It was fantastic.
Right.
So in any event, we were able in that case to one show that he was badly injured. He was devastatingly injured.
Right.
Like awful constellation of injuries. But I'll come back to that one. The second case. A guy who was working on the job, and I've seen lots of cases, Justin, you've seen lots of cases. This guy didn't do anything wrong. But he wasn't a likable guy at all.
Right.
And the jury in the second case, one, gave him nothing.
Right.
Yeah.
But they gave him nothing because they never even got to the question of how much money to give him because they didn't even want to.
They didn't even like him enough.
Nobody else did anything wrong.
Why didn't they like him?
I mean, we're going to be on the air, so I don't want to be too candid or use the wrong words.
But what I'm saying is, in the courtroom, he just had a demeanor that wasn't.
He came off like he was lying.
Okay.
He was just seemingly indifferent to anyone else. He just, again, the way that he presented. Again, it's the words that come out of your mouth, but the way in which they come out, which is equally, if not more important, and he just came off like an.
And you only got
that.
Yeah.
We're not FCC that
like a donkey.
Right?
Yeah. Donkey? Isn't it a donkey?
Is it a donkey?
Yeah. Yeah.
You only have one shot at it. And so I know, Dave, I've had some clients that have been on this. You know, I'm preparing them, and even in depositions, they come off really well. And then when the spotlight's on them, they almost take it. I don't want to say too seriously, but they almost change their persona. And oftentimes it doesn't come off as genuine.
Natural.
And people can sense that because all they have is this hour, 2 hours of time to project to 12 or whatever, however many juries you have. And, you know, you only get one shot at it, man. So if you end up coming off as not genuine or insincere, you almost overthink it. The worst trials I've had that have tanked have been clients who overthink it.
Well, and, by the way, that goes for public speaking also.
Sure.
So I guess as an attorney, you know, you're going to do a closing and you're doing all this. You spend all this time to do it. And one time in my life I can remember where I decided I was in front of the AFL-CIO when I started to read my presentation. And this is the first time I did it. It was like 20 some years ago. And, you know, I was in a friendly crowd. They they wanted to help. And they wanted to do our project.
They weren't throwing stuff at you? But, not like me and Dave did.
Whoa. Hold on. The former president of the AFL-CIO, of the building trades, Pat Gillespie, who was a good friend of my dad's and all, he came right at me hard. But it was already a yes.
Yeah.
But I made a mistake, and I overthought it. And I was afraid. So I guess in any type of situation like that, whether you're an attorney or a witness, it's like
yourself,
when that light goes on, I can see how it happens. So I try to.
Now, Dave, were you able to read that? You know, I'm always staring at the jury. Were you able to tell that as this guy's testifying that they just weren't connecting with him?
Yeah. I mean, listen, you know what you got when you go into it.
Yeah.
But with the first guy.
Yeah.
They love the jury's crying. They're passing around multiple tissue boxes.
Yeah.
And not only did they make an award, they gave him $8.5 million.
Wow.
But they found him, the first one, 0% responsible.
Right.
Because they loved
him. Is that helping? Is it almost always appealed?
Not with, I mean, if you're careful, no. I mean, at the end of the day, it doesn't really help anybody for there to be what they call an appellate issue, something that happens at trial that's going to get run up and delay the whole thing. But because of the way that that first case went, we actually we wouldn't have faced any appellate issues.
Right. Okay, so let's do this. We were like at the end of
time flies.
Woo! Dave, if you would, contact information for you at the firm.
Yeah, sure. So one thing I say to all my clients is I put my cell phone on my card because I mean it. I want you to use it. I want you to text me. I want you to call me. So I'm going to lead with that. It's 267-625-4575, but we also have landlines, and mine is 215-575-2958, and email is dlangsam, D-L-A-N like Nancy, G-S-A-M like Sam, at S-M-B-B like Sam Mary Boy Boy .com.
Awesome. Our host, Justin Cohen.
Thanks, Joe. Dave said, I am always reachable by cell, which is 848-702-7676. Text, call. Feel free to email at Justin at K as in Kite, H as in Harry, C as in Charlie, firm.com. It's Justin at KHCfirm.com. And of course, always feel free to call our office, 856-751-7676.
Last word.
Listen, Dave, thank you so much, my friend. To the listeners out there, Dave is one of the best people, one of the best lawyers I know. I've sent many, and we talk about this. I won't say my referral network small, but very selective, because one of the things I want to end on is that when I'm sending somebody to Dave or somebody else, it's a reflection on me too. And I have never once got any feedback on the fact that thank you for sending me to Dave in his office. They've done nothing but a great job. So I appreciate that, Dave, and thanks for coming on, my man.
Awesome. Listen, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the Justin Cohen Show.
Thank you, Joe, by the way. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Joe.
Of course, we want to thank David Langsam for being...
Pleasure's always mine.
And, of course, we want to thank Kyler Hernandez and Cohen for sponsoring the broadcast. On behalf of Justin Cohen and David Langsam, I'm Joe Dougherty. Have a great day.
Thanks, guys.